Welcome to the Shiur Aksava Kabbalah Parshas Behar. So, the Sedra, as we know, speaks about the institutions of Shemitah and Yovel to a very great extent. And we're told in Perek Chofei, Psukim Yudalit, and on, V'chisim kerum imkar lam yisecha, al-karam yadam yisecha, al-tanu yishasachiv. When you sell land, that's the Pashat of Pshat of the Pasuk, when you're selling land from one person to another, don't cheat one another. What does that mean? V'mispar shonim achar yovel tikne me'es lam yisecha, v'mispar shnei tzivuos yimkar lach. When you figure out how much the price of the land is that you're selling to your friend, you have to prorate the sale price based on how many years there are to the yovel, because after all the fellow is doing is buying the land until the yovel, and in the yovel year, the land is going to revert back to its original owner. So, you know, you have to prorate the price based on how long he's actually buying it for. B'mispar shonim achar hayovel tikneh me'esam yisecha. You should buy the land based on the number of years that follow the yovel, meaning the number of years that are left till the upcoming yovel, because the mispar shnei tzvuos yimkar lach, he's selling the land to you based on the years of produce that he's really selling. And in the next pasuk, it's a little bit more explicit. Lefi rov hashanim tar b'miknasto, if there are more years remaining until the yovel, so the price should be higher. Lefi ma'ot hashanim tamit miknasto, but if there are only a few years left to the yovel, so then the price should be lower. Ki mispar tevuos humocher loch, because in the end of the day, what he's selling you is a certain number of tevuos. Now, tevuo we know means produce. So it sounds like the pashat of pshat in the pasuk is as follows: you can never really sell land in Eretz Yisrael because the land is going to revert back to its original owner. All you're selling is the number of years of produce which are going to be produced by the land between now and the next yovel. So in other words, if you were selling the land, so maybe there you could talk about there being a fixed price on the land itself, but since you're not selling land, since you're merely selling the produce of that land for however many years are left to the yovel, so then you have to adjust the price based on how many years are left. That's what it sounds like the pasuk is saying, ki mispar tevuos humocher loch, because there's no such thing as selling land in Eretz Yisrael when there's a yovel in existence. All he's selling you is a certain number of tevuos, a certain number of years of produce, that are being sold. So the Haksav HaKabbalah comments on this, because the truth is, if you really take that statement very literally, it totally changes the way you look at the sale of land in Eretz Yisrael during the time that there's a yovel. Let's just throw out the question, which is going to be dealt with by the Ksav HaKabbalah. If I'm really not selling you the land at all, if I'm really just selling you, a certain number of years of produce that are going to, be produced by the land between now and the next yovel, do I have the right to develop the land? Right? Again, the psukim are talking about an agrarian society where basically why we should buy land. You're buying land to plant on it. Let's say I don't want to buy land to plant on it. I want to buy land from somebody and put up a 50-story skyscraper on it. Do I have the right to do that? I mean, if I really take literally the notion that I'm not buying the land in Eretz Yisrael, I'm just buying the produce, so maybe I don't have the right to put up a 50-story skyscraper. Maybe that's a right which is reserved for the original owner, and no one who buys the land in the interim is entitled to do anything else with the land other than just reap the produce of that land for those number of years. Is that indeed true? So the Aksav HaKabbalah writes, "Ki mispar tevuos humocher loch, ein perusho she'ein hakarka nimkeres klal." It is not the case. The pasuk does not mean that the land as such is not being sold. Ki im hatvuos sheyigadlu besode achar sheyizra'en alokeach. It's not the case that the pasuk is saying that the only thing which is being sold is the fruit, the produce of the land for however many years there are until the yovel. Ki ze yieh gorua mimocher peros sodeyu lechaveiro. Because if that was really what the pasuk meant, so this would be even worse than selling the produce of a field to one's friend. She'ein l'lokeach l'shtamish b'sodes zo klau. Afilu ikonis bosh lo b'shas l'psoas ha'peros. Let's say, you know, I have a piece of land, and I sell you the right to any fruit which is produced by that land. So your rights in the land are restricted to the fruits and gathering the fruits. When it's not the season to gather the fruits, you can't even walk onto the land. If I'm selling you the land simply for the purpose of collecting the fruits that grow from that land. Because I'm not really selling you the land at all. I'm selling you a stake in something that's produced by the land. And in that kind of case where I'm selling the fruit which is produced by a certain piece of land, so you, the buyer of the fruit, only have access to the field to be able to harvest the fruit, and I, the seller of the field, maintain rights to the field to enter, to do whatever I want with it, even after I sold it to you. So if you think about it, that's really not, you know, that's not really called selling a field. Because the buyer is not really buying anything. If that were to be the pshat in what the Torah is saying selling a field is during the period of Yovel, so that essentially there's no such thing as selling a field. I mean, that's what would come out according to the Torah's definition, and you don't get the impression reading through the psukim that what the institution of Yovel does is that it totally negates or nullifies the notion of selling a field. Yes, the field is restored to its original owner in the Yovel year, but until that time, it sounds like the one who bought the field has a much greater degree of control over the field than simply as if he bought it for the fruit. If he bought it for the fruit, he may not even have access to that field, you know, when the fruit is not in harvest season. Avo perush nispar tvuos humocher. So what the pasuk means instead, says Achsava Kabbalah, that you know, the seller is selling to the buyer a certain number of tvuos, a certain number of years of produce, is as follows. It's not that he's selling the fruits of the field. He's what's called in Hebrew selling the sada leperoseha. He's selling the field for the purpose of gaining its fruit. Now again, that may sound like a subtle distinction. Am I selling the fruit or am I selling the field for its fruit? But there's a critical distinction between those two things. As we said before, if he's just selling the fruit produced by the field, so then the buyer has no rights in the field whatsoever, even entry. He's very restricted in terms of going into the field. In contrast, if he's selling the field for the purpose of its fruit, so then he is an owner in the field. However, his ownership in the field doesn't give him unlimited ownership. It gives him quite a great deal of ownership. He can enter and exit whenever he wants. But the primary benefit he's getting from the field are the fruits, the produce, which is being produced by the field. But he still is considered to be an owner of the field. In such a case where you're buying the field for the purposes of its fruit, so then the seller loses the right to enter into the field after he sells it, which again is logical to us. Otherwise, if the seller still has access to the field, you know, whenever he wants, so I wouldn't call that a sale. You know, you wouldn't call that selling the land. And the buyer can make use of the field for what he wants. Similarly, if you buy any kind of field for a certain amount of time, now, again, let's leave aside the Yovel for a moment. Let's say we're talking about Bizman Azed, there is no Yovel. I buy land for 5 years with the stipulation that at the end of 5 years I'm going to give the land back to its original owner. Right? Because I set up my own version of the Yovel. So what rights do I have vis-a-vis the land during those 5 years that I own it, right? Can I buy the land and give it back 5 years later with a 50-story skyscraper on it? Do I have unrestricted rights as to what I can do with the land or no? You know, since I stipulated from the beginning that the land is going to go back at the end of 5 years, maybe there are restrictions on what I can do with the land. So here we say
that Hakodas Lisman Kotsuf, if I buy land for a set amount of time, Halokeach Mishtamish Beguf HaKarka Kechefso, the one who buys it can do whatever he wants with the land itself, Ochel HaPeros Kozman HaMechira, and he can eat the fruit as long as it's sold. Uvisof Tachzer LaBailim. And in the end, at the end of the 5 years, then he has to return the field to the original owner. However, throughout the period of time that he owns the field, for who bone the horis for osa the call the calls manu akosav commercial osa akona kinyan olam la olam commercial cost of harambam. However, as the Rambam writes, during those 5 years that he owns the field, he can do whatever he wants with the land itself. You want to build it up, you want to destroy it, you want to dig it up and, make a gigantic swimming pool, in the field. Do whatever you want. It's yours for whatever purposes you want. The only stipulation is you have to give it back at the end of 5 years. That stipulation does not curtail in any way your ability to do things with the karka during that period of time. Correct, right. In other words, that's part of what it means to be an owner. In other words, that's part of the stipulation. Now here he's quoting a Rambam. Right, exactly. It could go either way. Right, well, so it's unusual nowadays that you buy land with a stipulation to return it, but... Oh yeah, sure, and it causes the value of the land itself to skyrocket. Here he's quoting a Rambam. Let's just get the Rambam for a moment. No, he owns the chametz. So there, he's not an owner. He's a renter, right? So a renter's rights are restricted. Here he quotes the Rambam in the 23rd parak of Hilchos Mechira, and the Rambam writes as follows. This is parak of Gil Hilchos Mechira, halacha hey. Hamocher guf hakarka lizman kotsuf. If you sell land for a set amount of time, harezo mechira, says the Rambam, that's considered to be a valid sale. And the buyer can do whatever he wants to the land itself. For ochol haperos kozman mechira, and he can benefit from the produce as long as he owns it. Uvistof tachzar leba'aleho, just in the end, he has to give it back. Uma hefresh yesh ben amocher karkulus man kotsuf uvein hamakne osol peiros deha. What's the difference, says the Rambam, between two different kinds of mechira? Selling something for a set amount of time and selling land for the purpose of acquiring its fruit, right? In other words, the that which I'm acquiring in the land is the fruit of the land. What's the difference between these two things? The difference is as follows. If I buy land for the purpose of its fruit, so then although I'm allowed to benefit from the fruits, I can't touch the land itself in any way. I can't build on it, I can't destroy it, I can't build it up, I can't build it down. But if I buy land for a set amount of time, Hareza bone ohoreis for osa because manu hakotsuv kumosha osa akona kinyan olam la olam. Right, this is the lashon that the Ksav HaKabbalah quoted a moment ago. If you buy land for a set amount of time, even though there's a stipulation built in that at the end of that set amount of time you're going to give it back to its original owner, as long as you are an owner of it, you can do whatever you want to the karka itself, to the land itself. The Mishnah, the Magid Mishnah comments on this Rambam. The li nira, it would appear to me, shahamechaber medame hamocher lizman kotsuf lemocher bizman hayovel. That the Rambam compares selling land for a short amount, for a stipulated amount of time,
to somebody selling land during the Yovel year, during the time that there's a Yovel year. Because in that case, ben karov ben rachok, whether the Yovel is far off or it's near, also bo kol chefsa. You can do whatever you want with the land, afal pi shiyodua, shiachter karkel ba'aleha b'yovel. Right? So even though, says the Magid Mishnah, he doesn't even explain what the source for this is, but the Magid Mishnah says he thinks it's a Dover Pasha, it's obvious that if you buy land during the time that there is a Yovel year, which is which applies, which is functional, so during the time that you own the land, until you give it back to the original owner, you're allowed to do whatever you want with the karka. So the Rambam, taking that as a Dover Pasha, taking that as something obvious, said that was true of the during the time that there's the Yovel is true, even if two people privately stipulate that the land is going to go back at the end of a certain amount of time. Right? That's the Magid Mishnah's understanding. The Magid Mishnah takes as a Dover Pasha, and he says that that's trapped in the Rambam as well, that during the time that there's the Yovel, the owner of the land is a total owner of the land, can build it up, can destroy it, can do whatever he wants with it, he just has to give it back at the end, you know, when the Yovel rolls around, and, you know, the original owner cannot get involved in any way in preventing him from developing or destroying the land during that period of time. Right? So writes the Magid Mishnah in explaining the Rambam. Right? The
how is that different if someone goes as if into a long-term rental agreement? Would that be 99-year rental agreement?
Because in the end of the day, you're a renter, you're not an owner. I mean, you can have a long-term rental agreement, but again, being a renter, even for a long term, doesn't give you the right, you know, to develop that that land. Right. So, I think there's clearly a difference over there. In other words, let's say, you know, I rent a house. Right? Leave an apartment out of it for a moment. I rent a house. Okay, so I can make minor improvements to the house during the period of time that I'm a renter, but I don't have the right to knock down the house and put up another one instead of it, right? In other words, my rights as a renter are restricted. The Rambam is saying, if I'm an owner, even if I'm an owner for a set amount of time, you know, I can knock down the house and put up another one or not put up another one. In other words, I have unlimited rights as to what I could do with the land if I'm an owner of the land during that period of time, even though I know in 5 years I'm going to have to give it back to the original owner. Right? So, in light of all that, writes the Aksava Kabbalah, so it can't mean in the Pasuk, Ki Mispar Tfuos Hu Mocher Loch, that all that's being sold during the time that there's a Yovel is the produce of the field. No, it's not true. I mean, he's selling the actual land, you know, with all of the rights of access, with all the rights of development, you know, he has all of those rights during that period of time. So how do you understand the term ki mispar tfuos hu mocher loch? So writes the Ksava Kabbalah, lefiza ein loshen tfuos dekra dilon al tfuas ha'oretz davka. In light of this din that's mentioned by the Magid Mishnah, we have to interpret that the word tvuos doesn't mean produce in the narrow sense of the term, i.e. the fruits that are produced by the land. Because if the pasuk says that all you're buying during this period of time when there's a yovel is the tvua, the produce that comes out of the land, that's an inaccurate description of what you're buying. You're buying the actual land during this period of time. So what does tvuos mean? Ki kol minei schar v'harvacha habala la'adam nikra tvua. Rather, tzvua is defined more broadly. Tzvua means profit, right? Not necessarily profit in the sense of produce, but any kind of profit which a person gets is called tzvua, right? So he quotes the pasuk in Mishlei Perek Yud, tzvuas rasha lechatos, right? That which the rasha produces is sinful. Now, the rasha doesn't produce fruit. Whatever profit the rasha gains from his illicit activities is all going to be considered to be sinful. That's the meaning of that pasuk. So in other words, we see that the term tzvua can be used in the sense of profit, not just produce in the narrow sense. And in that case, what it means is mispar tzvuos hu mocher loch,
right, that what's being sold during this period of time is kol minei schar b'harvacha shebemisvah hashanim ha'elahu malcher loch. Ben gidule karka ben shar minei schar b'harvacha boi mitashmishi ha'karka atzma. The fact that you can work the land and produce fruit is something that you're buying. The fact that you can put up a 50-story skyscraper and reap the profit from that is also included in what you're buying during this period of time. In other words, the term tivua means, broadly speaking, any profit you get from the land is yours, because you're buying the land with the right to do anything with it during that period of time until you have to give it back in the yovel, right? So in other words, even though the pasuk makes it sound like your kinyan, your acquisition in the land is somewhat limited, in point of fact, based on this Magid Mishnah, and based on what it seems like the Rambam is saying, we have to reinterpret what the pasuk seems to be saying on a simple level, because, again, as he's proving, the kinyan, the acquisition, the degree of ownership that I have in the karka during this period of time is much more extensive than you would have thought at first glance.
So going to develop a land, the land back.
I mean, if he's smart, he could probably figure out a way to develop it, get a lot of profit from it, and the fact that the guy who's going to get back he's going to get back a piece of land with a hotel on it. Okay, so he's also going to get profit, but we could probably figure out some kind of way. Jews are smart, he'll probably figure out some kind of way that he can still maintain a hand in everything, even if after he gives back the karka. He'll give back the karka, but he'll leave himself the manager of the hotel, something like that. Yeah.
We really don't know what kind of financial stress the seller is in.
True.
But he just has to stipulate the contract that you can't.
Well, he could. Right, no, he could, but then, of course, he'd be selling, for less money, right? Because in other words, if I'm selling you less, if you have less ability to do anything, so you're not going to pay me as much money to buy the karka. But again, here the point is, without any external stipulations, what is the buyer allowed to do, right? In other words, I would think that even without a stipulation, by definition, if I have to give back this karka by the Yovel, by definition, I'm restricted in what I can do with this. So that's, he's quoting from the Rambam of the Magid Mishnah, but that's not really true. In other words, as much as I have to give back the land, but as long as I have the land, what I can do with it is more or less unrestricted.
In this time, when Yovel existed, it was agricultural society. So if you had a couple or a person who was getting older, he couldn't work the land. So he said, okay, it's 5 more years, I have a house on the land, and I'm selling you the land. You work it, I can't work it anymore. You can earn whatever you want, but I'm living in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And you live down the road.
Yeah.
So you're living in the house now, and I'm selling you my land. But I'm not selling you my house, and I'm going to live on my house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the question. Does he have to get out of the house? Or does he have to... What can he say?
No, so again, he can make stipulations when he's selling.
Stipulation, if you're only selling the value and profit you can earn, then it has nothing to do with the house per se. And therefore, man can still live in the house.
No, so I think you'd have to stipulate to be able to live in the house, because remember, part of what I sell you is access, and I'm essentially selling you my access, right? And as I'm taking my access away and giving my access to you.
You don't have access at all anymore.
Correct. Yeah.
But that's the question. When you sell the land in Israel, are you giving up the rights to go in the land?
Yeah, no, so it is. In other words, just like, again, leave the Yovel out of it. If you sold, a piece of land on which you had a house, and you did not make any stipulation that you wanted to keep the house for yourself, and the day after the contract is signed and everything is sealed, you come onto the property and say, by the way, of course I meant to keep the house for myself, so that's where the buyer whips out his shotgun and makes it clear that, if you wanted to do that, you should have stipulated that in the contract, right? So all what we're saying is that
the presence of the Yovel doesn't change that. Even though it's going to go back to you at, you know, by the 50th year, it doesn't change that. Now again, I always have the right to sell something and stipulate that I'm not selling everything, right? I can sell it and restrict your rights. I can sell it and keep a portion for myself. I always have the right to do that. The chiddush is that, you know, even when there's a yovel, when I don't make a stipulation, I'm selling the land without restrictions, you know? So in other words, the buyer can do whatever he wants with the land, even though he knows that in the end of the day, it's going to go back to its original owner.
If the buyer builds a hotel, does he have to leave the hotel on the property after the yovel?
Yeah.
Or could he just take it down?
He could take it down. In other words, he could do whatever he wants. He can put it up. He can take it down. You know, he's got to put up the dynamite and Erev Rosh Hashanah of the Yovel. You know, he'll blow the whole thing up. He can do that. Now, again, I don't know why he'd want to do that other than spite, right? Because he doesn't really gain anything from doing that, right? But if he wants to, he can. You know, in other words, it's his up until the Yovel year begins. So he has the right, certainly, to do that. Right? Now, this has been stipulated by the Magid Mishnah, and again, the Ksava Kabbalah is reading it back into the Pasuk. Ez Hashem, after Mai, we'll pick up and we'll see how this is not entirely Pashut, and the Ksava Kabbalah labors a little bit to try to reconcile other sources that seem to say that during the time that there's the Yovel, when you sell Karka, there are certain restrictions on what the buyer can do during that period of time. So that will do Be'ez Hashem after Ma'ariv. V'chamana ben Akasha Omer Rasa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Welcome to the second half of the Shiur HaKtav HaKabbalah Parshas Behar. Just to summarize what we spoke about in the first part, the Ksav HaKabbalah quotes from the Magid Mishnah, and he says it's implicit in the Rambam as well, that when a person would buy a field during the time that there was the Yovel, so he would have absolute rights during that period of time to do whatever he wanted with the land, even though the land inevitably was going to revert back to its original owner when the Yovel came. Nonetheless, until the Yovel came, the owner of the land was an absolute owner. He had absolute access to the land. He certainly was able to get the fruit of the land, and most importantly, he was able to develop the land as he wanted. Again, maybe it was silly to develop the land if he's got to give it back, but he has absolutely the right to build up the land, to dig ditches in the land, to do whatever he wants to the land itself. He's an absolute owner. The Pasuk says, Mispar Tfuos V'mocher Lach, which implies that all that's being sold is just the fruit which is being produced during those years. So like Sava Kabbalah says, the word tvua over here means not produce, but profit. And any profit that can be gained from the land, whether it's the produce of the land, whether it's access to the land, whether it's building and destroying on the land, all of that is considered to be part of profit. So the profits of the land, in the fullest sense of the term, belong to the buyer. So he introduced this idea and he says he believes that that is absolutely correct. However, a little bit longer in this piece, he quotes that there is a Yerushalmi at the end of the fourth parak of Gittin, Gittin Parak Dalet, Halacha Tes, and the Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi on the surface seems to contradict this idea which he mentioned in the name of the Magid Mishnah. The Yerushalmi goes as follows. Kona Sade Beyovel. If a person acquires a field during the period of time that there's a Yovel, Rabbi Ilah Omar Kana Karka, Rabbi Ilah says he's acquired the land, Rabbi Abba Bar Memel Omar Lo Kana Karka, Rabbi Abba Bar Memel says he has not really acquired the land. Masiv Rabbi Abba Bar Memel Rabbi Ilah Al Dait Chodaat Omar Kana Karka. So Rabbi Abba Bar Memel says to Rabbi Ilah, if you hold that he really acquires the land, Yachbar ba boros shichun ma'aros? Would it be the case that if you buy the land, you could dig all kinds of ditches and the like on the land? In other words, could that be? Could it be that you really acquire the land to the point where you're allowed to destroy the land itself? So even Rabbi Ilah, who says that kanakarka, that you really are an owner of the land during the time that there's a yovel, he responds, the Torah says that the original owner should return to his heritage. Be'eino, he returns to his heritage, to his ancestral land. Be'eino, in its pristine form. So the Yerushalmi seems to be saying that even Rabbi Lah, who holds that the owner of the land, that the buyer of the land does become an owner of the land, but it doesn't give him the right to deface the land by building up or destroying part of the land. The land has to go back in its original state to the original owner. The critical word over here is be'eino, you know, in its original state, it has to go back.
Not improved.
Not improved, not you know, not that's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. Again, according to this Yerushalmi, it sounds like there's a din d'oraisa that the land has to be returned in its original state to the owner. What's that?
He could dig.
Right. He could dig, but he'd have to give it, you know, he'd have to restore it afterwards. Now, right, Dr. Savaka. I'm sorry?
What's the nafka mina?
Right. So then you have to start exploring what the nafka mina is. Maybe it's just in terms of the, you know, who has title to the land, who has access to the land. Again, you have to figure out what the nafka mina is exactly. But it sounds like, you know, even the one who says kana karka, there are restrictions on what you can do with the karka. Nisbar mizeh de l'chulei alma hakona b'zman shayovel noeg ein halokeach mishane osa. It seems, according to this Yerushalmi, that if you buy land during the time that there's a yovel, you don't have the right to change it in any way. Mishum deksiv v'shav la'achuz osa bo'inom sheyashuv la'achuz osa k'mo shehayo mikodem. The pasuk says the original owner should return to his land, and it's his land be'eino, the way it was. So why is the Magid Mishnah that we quoted before so convinced that you can build and destroy on the land? It sounds like, no, the land has to go back as is. So his answer is a very interesting answer. The Nir Eli, it seems to me, says Aksava Kabbalah, the Nuscha Mutes Nizdam L'Rav HaMagid L'Rav HaMishnah L'Melech B'Yushalmi. The Mishnah L'Melech quotes this Yerushalmi, right? The Mishnah Lamech, again, just to make sure, to make clear something, the Magid Mishnah and the Mishnah Lamech are two different commentaries. You know, the Magid Mishnah says you can do whatever you want with the land. The Mishnah Lamech, you know, another commentary on the Rambam, questions this Magid Mishnah based on this Yerushalmi which we just quoted. Says that Sada Kabbalah, I believe the Mishnah Lamech is working with an inaccurate version of the Yerushalmi. And we'll see, he's going to change one letter, and it's going to change the whole Yerushalmi. Shnishtabesh os vav bin nun. What should have been a nun was written as a vav. How so? So consider the following. When Reb Abba Bar Memel asked Rabbi Lah, what, do you think that you can just dig holes in the karka just because you bought it? So Rabbi Elah's answer, according to our version of the Yerushalmi, is Hatara Amar V'Shav L'Achuzaso Be'eino. Right? You have to give back the land, Be'eino, in its original state. Suggest Aksava Kabbalah, let's change the word Be'eino to the word Bo'inon. Just change the Vav at the end to a Nun at the end. Right? Very easy to see how you could distinguish, how you could, you know, exchange a Vav for a final Nun. V'shav l'achuzaso bo'inon, we require that the original landowner go back to his achuza. So, what's the significance of that? So he says as follows: Time of the Rabbi Lo, eino mimilas l'achuzaso k'dats ha-mishnah l'melech. According to this reading in the Yerushalmi, the critical word is not l'achuzaso, to his inheritance, meaning to his inheritance the way it originally was. The critical word is vishov. He should return. If we hold that the buyer is not allowed to change the karka in any way, so that's not called selling the field. So if it's not called selling the field, so then it's not appropriate to say vishov lachuzaso, that the original owner returns to that which he sold. He never really left that which he sold. The fact that it says Vishav means that he relinquished any ownership that he had whatsoever and gave the buyer unrestricted rights to do whatever he wants in the karka. So instead of the pasuk v'shav lach, who's also teaching us that you can't dig in the karka, that you can't change or modify the karka in any way. If anything, the phrase v'shav lach who's also teaches us that there's a right to change and modify the karka, because otherwise it wouldn't be v'shav. V'shav lach who's also bo'inon. We require that there be the possibility of returning, that the original owner returned to the property, meaning that he relinquished the property and that the buyer had absolute right to do whatever he wanted with the property, you know, up until the Yovel itself. The Haksava Kabbalah quotes a Rashba in Gittin, where the Rashba quotes this Yerushalmi, and the Rashba in Gittin has the Yerushalmi the way the Haksava Kabbalah suggests it should be read, i.e., not Be'eno, but rather Bo'inon. Right? So in other words, based on that, the Haksava Kabbalah wants to suggest that, you know, this Yerushalmi is being misread by the Mishnah Lamelech, and in fact, if anything, the Yerushalmi is a raya, it's a proof to the fact that you do have the right to amend the karka itself, not the way that the Mishnah Lamelech is suggesting. The Eino means in its original state. Like the N, you know, means something which is untampered with.
So why could you do all kinds of improvements or changes during the period and make sure that you...
I guess you could do that, but in other words, the Magen Mishnah was suggesting that you don't even have to do that. The Magen Mishnah was suggesting do whatever you want to it, and then give it back however you changed it. In other words, you don't have to fill in.
But I get the impression you can't do anything with it. You have to maintain it the same way you got it and you return this.
Look, let's put it this way: in the end of the day, it has to go back the way it came. Right? So, you know, whether that means, practically speaking, that probably means you don't do anything with it. Okay, all right, no, I hear you. Okay. I think he's equating, you know, the question is, can I make modifications to the land and leave them there? I think that's really the issue. You know, to make modifications to the land and then, you know, put back the modifications, turn back the clock, it could be that everyone would hold that that's okay. Al-Kapana, what you see something, you know, over here is something incredibly fascinating. This din hangs on a letter. Literally hangs on a letter. You know, this question of whether it's a vav in the Yerushalmi or a nun in the Yerushalmi, you know, makes all the difference in terms of this halacha, you know, the way that Ksava Kabbalah is presenting this.
How does he get the right to do this?
What's that?
How does he get the right to change the letter?
I guess he bought...
Because it's the same form.
No, so his claim is, if you look in the Rashba quotes the Yerushalmi with a nun. So in other words, there's a source for the idea that the Yerushalmi's text is already, you know, subject to dispute as to whether it's a vav or a nun. Sorry? No. It's a question of the Yerushalmi. In other words, whether the word in the Yerushalmi, not in the Chumash. Chumash says v'shav lach uzasa. The Yerushalmi says either v'shav lach uzasa be'eno or v'shav lach uzasa bo'inon. Right? Now the question is what's the word in the Yerushalmi? Right. So again, we know in Babli Yerushalmi there could be many, many textual variants. You know, so that's the case over here as well.
A little bit out of my league with this comments and questions, but I don't think that there's no analogy. I was going to ask you afterwards that it would seem to me there's tremendous analogies over here to what goes on with the ketubah and the get.
Mm-hmm.
When a person signs, the person gets the dunya, he gets they call it next day, but look, he's allowed to do whatever he wants with it. It's like he's buying.
He can't sell.
He could improve it or he could lose it. He just has to give it back when he decides to divorce her. And then they do have the other kind that you stipulate that some barbell that he's got to give back just what he got, what he received. So there is a tremendous difference in how you approach the matter, and it's not as if there isn't any analogy.
There is precedent for getting, you know, acquiring property that doesn't give you...
I
hear that. But, you know, the question really is, when you're buying a field, you know, and normally speaking, I think if a person were to buy a field, the assumption is that you buy it in an unrestricted fashion, if you buy it and you're planning on giving it back to the Yovel, what rights does that give you? I mean, let's put it that way.
The owner, the Baal, could improve the worth of it, or he could lose it all.
Well, maybe yeah, maybe no. Maybe yeah, maybe no. I mean, that's exactly the discussion, right? In other words, what rights does the buyer have, given the fact that he's going to be giving it back, you know, in the time of the Yovel? So that
we say that in the get, that's exactly what happens. You just have to give the field back. Whatever is left.
Okay, so if you want to formulate the question this way, so, you know, is acquiring a field when there's a Yovel at play, you know, is it like that or is it not like that? In other words, yeah, right. You want to put it that way, you can put it that way, essentially, right? In other words, what is its status? So again, you see so much hangs on the Vav or the Nun, you know, just in terms of understanding this Yerushalmi. Okay, Bez Hashem, I think we're now back on schedule. So Wednesday night, you know, we'll resume the regular Parsha B'chukosai. Tomorrow night, Bez Hashem, we have the Kollel dinner, so I'm not going to be here, but Tuesday night we'll be back. We'll go back to the Gemara, and hopefully Bez Hashem will be back on track a little bit. Okay.